This podcast is from the Overnights program on ABC Local Radio. I'm Tony Arthur. Private health insurance premiums are set to increase by an average of 6% next month, leaving many Australians to question whether they're receiving value for money. The federal government has argued that premiums could have been even higher without its intervention. Nonetheless, 500,000 Australians dropped or downgraded their health insurance in the last financial year. That begs the question, will the private health funds eventually price themselves out of existence? Joining us now is Dr. Sophie Lewis, lecturer and qualitative health researcher at the University of Sydney. Dr. Sophie Lewis, good morning to you and thanks for your time.
Good morning. It's lovely to be here.
Is an average of 6% increase in private health insurance premiums justified?
Look, it's a very good question. Under the Private Health Insurance Act, the health minister must approve requests for increasing premiums. But what we are hearing is that there's general dissatisfaction in the community about these rises and whether people are actually getting any value for money with these rises.
We have seen consistent price rises over a number of years, though. Is this something we can expect to continue into the future?
I think so. We have seen large increases over the past 15 years, and I think that we can expect that to continue.
But this year's increase is, generally speaking, a little lower than usual and past increases. Will this make much of a difference to the average policyholder?
Probably not that much. You'll probably find that for the average consumer, if they had cover for families, that they're still going to be out of pocket about $200 a year extra with this increase.
And I'm certainly not asking you to be a mouthpiece for the private insurance companies, but why are they saying there is a need for a rise in the premiums?
Well, the private health sector would argue that they're paying out higher benefits, particularly for hospitals, but also for extras, and so that they need to increase these premiums to cover their costs. But we do know that the premiums have been increasing at a higher rate than inflation.
Is there any inefficiencies in the system that some of this could be put down to?
It's quite possible. I mean, one of the concerns that many have is that there isn't a lot of competition in the insurance sector, and that could be promoting inefficiencies. The industry is very highly concentrated around two major players and about five that have about 85% of the market.
Given the 30% rebate and higher premiums if you join after your 30th birthday, is taking out a policy still a better option than not?
Yeah, look, it's a really difficult question and it's going to come down to individual circumstances. Some people, we have lots of different reasons why we take out a policy. Some people are going to do it for financial reasons because it will actually minimise their tax, whilst other people do it because they want to have a choice of doctor, or they might want to avoid wait times for elective procedures. I mean, we do know that the mix of levies and surcharges and rebates can make it actually really difficult for consumers to judge the true cost and value of their private health insurance and whether it might be better for them to rely on the public system to meet their health needs.
Well, that is always the thing, isn't it? The dilemma. We do have the public health system. You'll mm-hmm. never really be left out if you need mm-hmm. particularly urgent medical care. And you mm-hmm. often hear people sort of saying, well, because it was something urgent, because I went by ambulance or we went to the emergency department, my private health insurance didn't matter a jot. Mm-hmm. I was still looked after and treated and nobody asked about my private health insurance. So you can understand why some people sort of think, well, why pay it? Why have it?
Yes, it's a good question, and we hear that a lot from our consumers. Some people have actually used their private health insurance when they have gone to a public hospital and have been surprised. They haven't noticed any difference in the quality or the care that they received, and they actually question why they actually used it.
Yet I did have a texter earlier in the morning saying that he needed some surgery and would have been in big trouble without his private mm-hmm. health insurance, and he mm-hmm. was able to get attended to very quickly. Choice of mm-hmm. surgeon, excellent service, and it meant a lot to him to have that reassurance that he could back off that. Do you think that's why a lot of people do have it? They just want it as that safety net for something that might urgently need to be attended? Two?
Peace of mind is the biggest factor driving people to have their private health insurance. I think people are really worried and concerned that if they did have a health problem, that they might not be able to get care in a timely manner. So we do hear a lot about how people are worried that they might be stuck on a waiting list for a long time if they needed to go and have a procedure. I mean, there's limited evidence that that is always the case because, as you said, in an urgent situation that people are going to be put straight through. And I guess the other concern is that when you've got that kind of system, that then people that have to rely on the public system are going to have even greater waiting times.
What about extras cover? Is that something most people could or should do away with?
Look, that's a good question. And I think people, it comes down to the individual, but they should be thinking about if they're actually going to be using it or whether they would be better to save for particular services that they're going to need during the year. And I think also having a look at whether they will actually be using their all of the extras up to the cap that they have for that year.
Are people at the same time often paying for services they don't need and don't use?
Quite possibly. We know that a lot of people that have private health insurance actually don't use their private health and they'll rely on the public healthcare system. Do they need it? I mean, we know that people actually often sit and leave their policies, so they don't actually review it very often. So it's probably highly likely that they are still paying for things that they don't need. And we would encourage people to be actually reviewing their private health insurance regularly to check that they are being covered for the things that they need.
With many insurance policies for different things we have in life, and I think the big one that we see advertised a lot is car insurance, that it can almost be tailored to the individual depending on where you live and how much you use your car and all that sort of thing. Are the health funds getting better at tailoring policies?
I'm not sure. There's little evidence that it's happening. I mean, if people, there is the possibility that people can go and choose what is covered and not. But I think one of the things that we hear is that people are dissatisfied that most of the private health insurance funds and schemes are quite similar to one another, and there actually isn't a lot of difference between them. But I think one of the worthwhile things doing would be to go to one of the comparative sites, and particularly the government private website, to actually look at policies side by side, because we do have a community rating, and that means that people can change their policies without being penalised. And I think some people don't actually realise that you can do that.
Like you can with your, say, green slip insurance, there are websites you can go to that will compare all the companies that are available depending on your circumstances. You can do the same thing with your health insurance, and it's a government website.
Yeah, because some of the other comparative sites, we're not necessarily sure who they're sponsored by. So that's something that people are not using very much, but there could be benefits from using those kind of websites.
And it's a similar sort of thing. It asks you a series of questions about your circumstances, so it narrows down everything and then eventually comes up with an answer sort of saying, well, here are the perhaps three best or five best options for you, up to you to choose which company.
Yes, that's true. And you can choose how much excess and things you pay and what kind of cover, because I think some people are actually surprised because of these increases in prices. They're downgrading their cover, and then they might be surprised they're actually not covered for something that they thought they were covered for.
Well, what about the gap? You so often hear people talk about the fact that they did use their private health insurance, had an operation and had it done in relatively quick time when they found out they needed it. It was arguably elective surgery, but they nonetheless could get it done quickly because they had the private health insurance. Then 3 or 4 weeks later, in the post arrives this whopping great bill from the anaesthetist or other people associated with the surgery, and people are going, wait a minute, I thought my health insurance covered all of this, but it often doesn't.
Yes, that is true, and that's something that we hear a lot, increasing out-of-pocket or gap fees, and it's not something that's always transparent to people. It's quite confusing to find out what exactly you're going to be paying in addition and what your private health insurance won't cover. And you know, the cost of the anaesthetist is one thing. People might also pay gaps for their hospital stay, doctor's fees and other types of procedures that aren't covered. And so people don't actually know what type of policy they have and what it covers. It's kind of left up to the individual to ask these questions of their insurance fund and also to ask the doctor or the hospital at the time. But it's quite difficult to do when you are going in for a particular health procedure to be asking all those questions and finding out what kind of fees you might be up for. And we do know that the average out-of-pocket costs for going to a hospital using private is $285, and for extras it's $45.
What then, is it possible to assess the percentage of the population who are underinsured?
It's a difficult thing to do. We know that now we're having increasing numbers of people that have some type of insurance. We do know that people are downgrading, so it's likely that some people won't be covered for the things that they need. I guess the other important thing to remember is that we do have a universal tax-funded healthcare system, Medicare, which is there to provide healthcare for people if they really needed it.
So then, taking all of this into account with the public health insurance system, is it in need of the private health insurance system, I beg your pardon, is it in need of reform? And if so, what needs to change?
Policy experts would say yes, it does need reforming. And they argue that it can be an expensive way of doing what Medicare does. There's one of the things I think needs to happen is that private health insurance needs to be simplified and more transparent for people so that consumers are actually able to make an informed choice. We know that we have 34 providers and some 2,000 different plans. There's also the concerns around it becoming a two-tiered system. That's going to have a major impact for Australians who don't have private health insurance.
I'm sorry, can you speak a bit more to that as what the two-tiered system, how it would come about and what it would mean?
Yeah, so there is fears of a two-tiered system, which is where you'd have one system for people that could afford it and assist, and then the rest would have to rely on a second-rate public system. And that it would drive inequalities across the system because those who can afford it, who generally have better health anyway, would actually be able to get care more quickly. So there is an argument there that if we have more private health insurance, that it's actually going to be driving up costs. For example, that you might take doctors out of the public system, and we only need to look at America to see an example of that system.
And I don't want to completely demonise here the private health insurance companies and the services they offer and the reassurance and comfort that a lot of people feel from knowing that they've got that cover should they need it. What then are the benefits of private health insurance?
Well, people say to us that the main benefit is peace of mind and security, that it will give them the security to get the care that they need when they need it, wait times that people won't have to wait as long if they needed to have an elective procedure. Choice of doctor is another one, and choice of hospital, so being able to choose your surgeon. I think that's probably the main benefits for people, and just being there so that they wouldn't have to pay a huge bill up front if they needed to have something.
All right, then we talk about those who do have private health insurance. Are there groups that are overrepresented? Older people, younger people, single people, people in families, males versus females?
Mm-hmm. Well, the biggest users of private health insurance are in the 60 to 79-year-old age group. We do know women in their 20s and 30s are also using private health insurance for maternity care. When it comes to extras, all age groups are using this, and they're using it mostly for dental, but then also optical, physio and chiro. And then there's a group that have private health insurance and are actually not using it, so about 25% don't use their private health insurance.
Mm. And you mentioned dental there. It's often asked the question in these sort of discussions, why isn't dental covered under Medicare?
Well, it's something we hear all the time, that people wish that it was covered under Medicare. It is very expensive, and it would be expensive to put under Medicare. So it is one of the things people talk about when they talk about the importance of extras, being able to have dental care. And again, it would be about thinking about whether the cost of extras actually justifies how much people are paying for their dental each year.
And what are the services people are using mostly in the system that when they do have their insurance, what gets the most claims?
The most claims still comes from hospital care, so things like elective surgery, and then maternity care as well. And then when it comes to extras, it's dental and then optical after that.
Okay. What are the disadvantages, apart from the impact on the hip pocket, I suppose, if you have private health insurance, but you're very healthy and never really make a claim?
Yeah, well, that is one of the disadvantages, is that people actually aren't often using it. They might have it for years but never use it. Some of the other disadvantages, I mean, you mentioned the cost factor, and actually some people will, particularly those on low incomes, may have private health insurance that may actually not be able to cover the gap fees for a particular procedure, so they can't actually use their private health insurance. Another one is about where you live. So some people may not have a choice of a service or a provider in the area that they live. They may be surprised about that. And then, yes, as you said, the big one is the unexpected out-of-pocket expenses.
And when you say depending on where they live, this is regional versus capital cities, that sort of thing?
Regional and rural people might have less choice of services. And I think the other thing is that some people think that private health insurance will buy them extra quality. And there is little evidence that that is the case. And some people are actually surprised that when they use it, when they go into the public system, they actually have quite high quality of care.
Certainly is, from my experience, and to back up what you just said, strangely enough, Anne sent a text that says, I took out private insurance several years ago, and a couple of years ago I went as an emergency patient to a hospital. I was asked if I had private cover. They took details and did claim my stay. However, I was kept on a thin wheelie trolley in a corner that day, night and next morning, with no food, drink, TV or radio. I couldn't sleep as I was afraid I'd roll over, so in agony I chose to leave and go and see a specialist to organise immediate surgery, which I had to get a loan to cover, thousands of dollars in out-of-pocket expenses. That's the experience of Anne. Does that sort of thing happen very often in your research?
Sadly it does, and we do hear this. I mean, we hear that people, when they go into a public hospital, they might feel pressured to say that they have private health insurance. And then others who have perhaps more system knowledge will know that that they won't reveal that they have private insurance in a public hospital, because they know that they'll get similar treatment and experience. It is certainly something that we do here.
You might like to join this discussion, asking this morning, will you keep your private health insurance with the premiums going up next month? Is it something you feel you can't afford to keep paying if it keeps rising? Or can you simply not afford to not have it? Have you had any notable experiences with your own private health insurance? And have you been one of the 500,000 Australians who downgraded or abandoned altogether your private health insurance in the last financial year? If you'd like to join the discussion, you're most welcome. Our guest is Dr. Sophie Lewis, lecturer and qualitative health researcher at the University of Sydney, as we look at the issue of private health insurance. And Sophie Lewis, can I ask you, could the health system ever be privatised altogether, like so many other things have been done by governments, federal and state?
Look, it's a good question. I don't think it will ever be completely privatised. I think people really highly value Medicare. So I don't think we'll ever go towards a private-only system like the United States experience. I mean, they pay twice as much of their GDP to healthcare as we do. So the evidence is there that it does drive up overall costs, so it isn't an effective way.
And when we talk about private health insurance companies, why is it that some are run for profit and others are not for profit?
Look, it's a good question. We have 34 different private health insurance funds, and I think it's something that people don't necessarily consider when they're making their choices, and certainly the for-profit ones are the ones that have the larger market share, and some of the smaller not-for-profit private health insurance funds, and it might surprise people when they actually look at their fund, whether it's for-profit or not.
Does it make any difference in the long run who you're with, a non-for-profit, a not-for-profit or a profit?
Look, there isn't a lot of evidence to say whether that is the case. I mean, the not-for-profits would argue that because they're not, they don't have shareholders, they don't need to make a profit, that it, all of their the money goes back to benefit members. But we actually don't have very much evidence about whether it has a true benefit yet.
And what about the ones that are set up to, say, to be aligned with your profession, like teachers' health funds or defence health funds? Do they really have the best interests in heart for some reason or other for your profession or career?
Mm-hmm. I think one of the benefits of going with those kind of funds is they usually will give a discount for their members. So they might get a 10% discount on their policies compared to, say, one of the bigger funds. So it can be a little bit cheaper.
Right, okay, if you align yourself with the one that goes with your profession. And Paul's given us a call this morning. Hello, Paul.
How are you going?
Your question?
Is the problem, the difference between private and public, as far as the gap is concerned, paying any gap, is the price that doctors and that just charge, you know, a lot higher prices because they can if you went private versus what they'd actually get refunded for doing the government job? The gap is a big issue for me and my family when we do, if we do use our private cover. I just don't understand why we get these exorbitant bills.
Sophie?
Yeah, it's a big question. And there is some evidence that the private system is driving up the costs for doctors' fees and specialist fees because they can charge more in the private system. And it actually drives costs up in both systems.
Can they essentially charge whatever they want?
Yes, there is a price point that the government will pay. So Medicare will cover 75% or 85% of doctors' fees, but doctors can then charge above that fee, and that's where the gap comes in. So private health insurance covers a proportion, Medicare covers a proportion, and then whatever the doctor or specialist charges above that is covered by the patient, and that can vary depending on hospital, depending on doctor.
Rod says, surely if a company is making huge profits, then they should not receive an increase in premiums or not be able to charge an increase in premiums, I think is me. We should have answers to this question. Is it, you know, can it be tied to the fact that if they're making a lot of money, the government should somehow be able to sort of say, well, you know, maybe you shouldn't bump your premiums up this time around?
It's a very good question. I mean, in this round, the health minister did actually tell the funds that they needed to bring their price increase down. And there was quite a lot of variety between the different insurance funds in what their price increases were. So premium increases ranged from 3% to 9%, I think, this round.
And another comment on the text line saying, will the increases to the private system, when will the increases to the private system create too much pressure on the public system and then become a government priority?
It's something that we hear all the time is that private health insurance eases pressure on the public system, and that if we increase the costs of private, that it's going to increase pressure on the public system. I mean, there isn't a lot of evidence that that's the case, but it is something that we need to be mindful of, that if people are dropping out of private health insurance, that could be one consequence.
Mm. It certainly sounds like it could flow on that way. Let's say hello to Manny. Morning, Manny.
Yeah, good day, Tony. How are you going?
Well, thanks. What gets on your nerves in this debate?
Well, I've been tired of the couple of comments made, but the main one that really gets on my nerves is that I've been paying health insurance for years and years with one of the majors, and, you know, when it comes from the United States, you want major dental surgery, all you need to just say a certain amount, and it doesn't sort of accumulate as your membership progresses, just whatever's entitled for that year, whether it's optical, dental, or other. And I think it's just the rot, to be honest with you, considering either switching to a member's home health fund or we're just dumping the whole lot.
So it's a case of when you do need something major done, particularly dental surgery, which can cost a lot of money, you find it's only a relatively small amount you'll get back from your health fund.
Yeah, well, imagine that I'm currently paying $307 for a couple a month. Times that, how many years I've been paying, I'm sure enough put my contribution in that I would suggest that the entitlement need to have, say, $2,000 worth of dental work in one occasion, for example.
Yeah, and you can suddenly be hit, can't you, Sophie, with a very expensive incident of some sort, which is going to blow apart the cover that you've got. You didn't plan for that.
It is something we hear a lot about how people have paid for years and years, and then particularly with premium increases, might have to actually drop out of cover altogether after paying for it for 20 or 30 years. Some people talk about how they're paying twice. So they pay for their private health insurance, and then when they actually do use it, having never used it before, they're then up for a huge out-of-pocket expense. They really didn't expect that they would. They thought that it would be covered.
Yeah, well, you just don't plan for these things, do you? Let's go to Anne-Marie and say good morning. You recently had surgery after you were injured, Anne-Marie.
Yes, I've had orthopaedic surgery, and I'm with a major health insurer, and I've been with them for 30 years, and all of it, I've been told that unless I increase change my policy and up the level of cover I've got, that they won't cover me for a lot of orthopaedic stuff, and they virtually said, oh, well, you know, that's the way it is. Just increase your cover or forget about it.
And you'd already been paying for 30 years.
Yes, I had. And, I've just had a lot of orthopaedic surgery, and I've had to have aftercare and all that rehab and all that sort of stuff. But we're still paying more and more and more, and I was always an advocate for people doing their... having, if you can afford it, having private insurance, pulling our weight and not relying on the public system all the time.
Yeah. Mm.
And then you find, well, why have I bothered?
Yeah, it can be tough, can't it? Anne-Marie, thanks for sharing your story with us. Andy says, my in-laws have been on the very top level of cover for many years. My father-in-law had back surgery yesterday, and he will be sharing his room with four other people for 8 days. As it was the first time they had claimed anything, they're annoyed that he couldn't at least get a single room with his own toilet and shower. They will be leaving their cover immediately, says Andy. A lot of people seem to have bad experiences, Sophie, with the system when they think that they're going to be well looked after because they've been paying to their fund for a long time. Is a lot of that happening on a regular basis, is it?
It is something that we hear, I think, especially because of the way that it's marketed to us. That you will get a private room, and you will get a choice of doctor, but in actual fact, that may not happen when you actually need to go to hospital, and it does surprise people. And then we hear the opposite story of people in the public system that expected to be in a room with lots of other people and actually got their own room, and were very surprised that they they did. And we hear that a lot with maternity care is a big one where that happens.
Wally on the text line says, I have private health cover, which costs me an arm and a leg. I'm also on the aged pension and I'm certainly not rich. My wife recently had a total knee replacement. The gap fees came to $6,000 and I had to get a bank loan to cover this. Yes, I will be bailing out of the private health cover and relying on the public system. Yet another story. Okay, Kathy wants to talk to us this morning about a point which was made earlier about asking the questions ahead of surgery and deciding who is the best provider for you. Morning, Kathy.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
That's all right. What's your question here specifically?
It's more really... seeking a comment from your speaker.
Sophie Lewis?
Yes. Yep. I've sort of come in on the tail end of the conversation.
You're right.
I'm always intrigued by the fact that we're told if you have private health cover, you can choose your doctor or go to the hospital of your choice without having a long waiting time. I actually think most people, if they have a health issue, they're off to their GP, they go to whoever their GP sends them to, unless they have a terribly bad experience. Nobody goes in and says to the specialist, well, tell me about yourself. Where did you do your training? What are your qualifications? How often do you upgrade yourself? Where do you kind of sit in the, you know, are you in the top five in your field maybe? Because doctors have a very special position in society, and there are two things. One is that most people don't ask any questions, and two, most of us aren't really qualified to judge anyway.
And I suppose it depends on whether we've got the time to shop around, but it's a very good point you make. Sophie Lewis, what would you say to what Kathy's comment?
It is a good point, and we hear this all the time that people actually say, well, I have all this, I've been told I could have this choice, but how would I know what questions to ask and how to decide what is a good doctor or what hospital I want to go to. And they tend to rely on their GP or a referral, or they rely on their own personal experience or the experiences of people in their social networks. And those are the biggest factors. And I think one of the things that that consumers would like is to have more information that is easily available to them that explains some of these things and where people can actually look up and see. We hear that people want to have information about, for example, the wait time in their particular hospital in their area, but it's very difficult to find this kind of information.
And I must say the text line has come alive with some very long texts, which is pretty hard for me to proofread. I'm doing my best to get through them as we go through this discussion. So if I don't read yours, I do apologise. But Chris says, we don't have private health and have no plans to get it. The amount of things not covered, or the number of things not covered, absolutely amazes me. We worked out that with the medical issues in our family, it would cost us more to be in private health because 90% of our problems are specialists. And specialists are not covered. I thought the idea of private health was to cheapen the rate when medical was needed. So says Chris. Let's go to another Chris. This is Christine this time. You've been insured for many years. What's your plan with the coming increases, Christine?
Well, I definitely will opt out. I will not stay in it. I haven't used it except deliberately. I got new glasses every year, which I'm going to go Monday for another appointment, and that will be the last time. Because it's not worth it.
Do you think as you get older, though, it's the wrong time to drop out of a fund? Or is it a case of not being able to afford it?
No, well, I'm a pensioner, yeah. But what worries me more is the gap. Because the surgeons or the specialists, whatever, they just charge, you know, you hear stories, thousands of dollars, well, that I definitely couldn't afford. Mm. So, and where I live, it's a good public hospital. My husband was in there twice within 6 months with broken hips, first one, then the other, and he had fantastic service and operations. Everything went quickly, and recovery was good. Apart, he couldn't walk anymore because there was the nursing home's problem anyway. It shouldn't have happened, but that's besides the point. And no, I definitely will not stay in it.
All right, Christine, thank you for your point and comment there. I will come to Jennifer in a moment because she does raise an interesting point I think that many people might agree with too. But firstly, on the point of overcharging, Margaret is a medical secretary. What advice do you have for us this morning, Margaret?
I think that most people should have a really good communication with their local GP, and if they are needing to be referred to a specialist, ring up and ask the fees. I know in my practice I work for a very well-known person. He's a physician, and the procedures he does, I write them a letter telling them what we charge in our practice, how much out of pocket they're going to be, and because he charges the schedule fee in hospital, between Medicare and their private insurance, they're 100% covered. They're not, they don't have any out-of-pocket expenses. And I believe that there are some people who would never exist in the public system because they demand everything, even when they're in a public hospital.
Right.
You know, private rooms and things. I mean...
But certainly you're saying don't be afraid to ask, find out ahead. If you've got the time, if you have the opportunity before you need some major surgery or whatever, make sure you don't get that nasty shock a few weeks later.
Well,
ask the question.
I've been in hospital and I've had a knee replacement and I was out of pocket, but I knew about it. But I wanted that surgeon and at that stage I could afford it. I had a husband, unfortunately, he died. And yes, he paid private insurance till his death and at 61 years of age. He didn't ever have. He didn't ever go to hospital. He didn't ever want to. Yeah. So, you know, I do ask people, always ring and ask. We medical secretaries want to see people well. We don't want to see them crying at the end of the, having had a treatment of some description and see them, you know, out of pocket. We're only too glad to ask our specialist. This person has, you know, a problem or is unable to pay. Well, I don't have that, but I know plenty of my friends will speak to their employers and tell them the patient's circumstances. And if it doesn't suit, they're not the only doctor.
All right. Thank you for your informed point of view on that, Margaret. We do appreciate it. I said we would go to Jennifer because she raises an interesting point. Jennifer, thank you for waiting.
That's fine.
Something upset you about a major health fund?
Well, there's 2 points, actually. The first point is that they are now pushing people in the area of preferred provider. And if your dental specialist is not a preferred provider, you don't get back nearly as much refund as those that are going to a preferred provider. And that smacks of the American system. The other thing that kind of disturbs me is that a couple of years ago, one of the major health insurance companies was sponsoring the Australian Open tennis competition. And I'm querying why the government doesn't legislate that when we pay these high premiums, the insurance companies are forced to give all the profit back to the provider, to the public, and not sponsor major international sporting competitions.
Got a thought on that, Dr. Sophie Lewis?
Oh, look, it's a really interesting point you raise, and I think that that's where people don't actually know that some of these companies are for profit and there are options that aren't for profit.
Robert on the text line asks, is anyone out there happy with their private health cover? If you are, you might like to give us a call. Nathan asks, do we still pay a gap under the public system? The answer to that is no, isn't it, Sophie? There's no, because there's no charging in that system. Mel says on the text line, we've paid for 45 years, now 68 years old. It's a struggle to pay. We resent having paid so much over the years, and now no equity in our fund. It goes up year after year. Should not be a profit-driven business. I mean, that's what a lot of people seem to think they'd really, really like to see, isn't it, is that their loyalty and their long-term payment, if they haven't claimed, should be rewarded if they do make a claim after, say, 30 years or something. Sophie, is there any provision in any of the funds for that sort of thing?
For saving because you have been paying for a long time?
No. Yeah, earning sort of brownie points for going
no.
along.
No, that's why the community rating system is there, so that people actually can shop around and have a look at if they're unhappy with their provider, that they should really go and have a look if there's another fund that provides a better service or perhaps is less expensive for them. So I would encourage people to check at least every year if there's a better deal for them out there, because they aren't going to be penalised. And I think there is this fear that it works like life insurance, that we may actually be penalised for the age that we're at or our health status. And in the, with health insurance, it's regulated. You cannot charge people more because of their health status.
All right, we did ask, is any, or Robin in particular asked on the text line, is there anyone out there happy with their private health cover? I think we might have found one in Bernie. Hello, Bernie.
Yeah, hi, how are you?
What's your thoughts?
Oh, I'm very, very happy. We're around our 80s. I've had a hip replacement. My wife has had some big operations. I think the hip was about $12,000 in private rooms in the hospital, and we study and sacrifice with older people, and as you get older, you're going to want this sort of thing, and health at our age is very critical. I think people take out life insurance and they don't mind paying it. When they get priorities, what you need in life, don't complain about it, health funds going up. We sacrifice a lot of things, and I'm very, very happy being in a health fund.
All right, Bernie, thank you for that. Now, because we're running close to time with the next news coming up, we've also got Rick who's called in this morning. Likewise, Rick, you give health insurance the thumbs up?
Yes, indeed I do. I work in law enforcement, and my wife and I, we've both had significant health issues over the last couple of years. My wife had a heart failure and a pacemaker installed, and the cost of that was over $70,000. I had pancreatic cancer and had half my pancreas removed, and that was about $40,000. In addition to that, I also took out the health fund's sickness and accident cover, so we got a payout for my wife of $50,000 for that, $30,000 for myself. And as far as I'm concerned, even if I pay it for the next 20 years, I've already got my money's worth out of the health fund.
All right, but, Rick, thank you very much. I'll just have to move on, though. But, Sophie, the couple of stories there, like Rick and Bernie, they're happy with their situation. Perhaps we don't hear those stories often enough?
Yeah, there are definitely people that are happy with their private health insurance. And I think, I mean, often until you have a bad experience, it really depends on the experience that you have. If you have a positive experience, then you're very satisfied and very happy. And then if you have a bad experience, either in the public or the private system, then you're going to be unhappy with that system. And that's something that we often have to judge on, is our personal experience or the experiences of those around us.
Well, you're less than 2 minutes away from the next news, but I will let you have the last word. What would be your advice to people as we approach this average 6% increase next month in private health insurance premiums?
I think two main things would be to go out and have a look around and see if there's what your policy covers. Check that it covers the things that you need, and it doesn't cut, you know, it's not covering things that you don't need anymore. So tailor it to yourself and maybe look at whether there's a policy that's better for you. And then the other thing, backing up one of your caller's comments, is to actually, if you do need to go and have a procedure, to ask your doctor and to ask whether there'll be any costs involved for you and what will be covered and what won't be covered, so that you actually aren't being shocked by an unexpected cost.
Don't be afraid to shop around. Don't be afraid to ask questions if you've got the time and the luxury of that time to ask them, by the sounds of things.
Yes, yes.
Thank you very much for your time this morning. Do appreciate it.
Thank you.
Dr. Sophie Lewis, lecturer and qualitative health researcher at the University of Sydney. My apologies to all those online and the text pouring in with all your questions. It certainly sounds like something we will have to revisit in the future.
And that's another podcast from the Overnights program on ABC Local Radio. I'm Tony Arthur. Thanks for listening.